Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing 2021, baby. Oh yeah.
Welcome to Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. My name is Luke, and this is my thing. Hope you're doing well. Hope you've been having a very productive week, creating, making, and shaking. In today's episode, we're going to have a little chat about going full-time as a writer and the value of that goal with a friend and fellow writer, Paul Stevenson. But first, before all that, let's have a bit of news. Remember in the first episode of season two, I told you I had an interview for a game writing gig. Could have been a bit of a life-changing game writing gig, in all honesty. And I, for whatever reason, spiked my pants. I don't think I spiked them. I think somebody else spiked them. That's the thing. And I didn't think the interview went very well at all. And yet, surprisingly, I got asked back for a second interview, which I had yesterday. And I think it went pretty well. I was a lot more relaxed. I wasn't anywhere near stressed or anywhere near as... I can't go into too many details. But basically, I think it went a lot smoother, which might be a bad thing, to be honest, because I thought the first one went really badly. And I got asked back for the second one. So the fact that I think this one went okay might not be a good sign. We shall see. But you know what I would say? I did everything I could. If I get through, cool. If I don't, what else can I do? You know, I gave it my all. I've also been working on my novel this week, Dust and Fingers. It's actually called On the Road of Dust and Fingers, and it's a post-apocalyptic beatnik bizarro novel, kind of mashup of Fallout and Jack Kerouac's On the Road, kind of bohemian take on Annihilation or Station 11. This is a book that's going to go out to agents, and I've started writing it from the start again. I need to stop doing this, but I'm 12,000 words into it again. Pretty happy with it so far. And I just need to make sure it's an absolute banger from word one to word last. I need to make sure it's an absolute banger because it's going to be going in front of agents. So it's banger or nothing, I'm afraid. So some letters from the Massive. Carolyn O'Brien got in touch to say, after listening to your podcast about the challenge, I feel compelled to voice my opinion. I am presently trying to write a story for an anthology, but I'm having a hard time staying motivated. I've learned that by adding my own deadlines, it causes unnecessary stress and anxiety. Life has deadlines and society has no problem enforcing them. I do, however, write down my ideas for my story as they come and save the logic research for later. Thanks for listening. No, thank you for listening, Carolyn. Yeah, it's weird when there's... I will say last week I was very stressed. I had a lot of deadlines in the day job, and also I was imposing these deadlines to myself on top of that. But I also agree, when you're writing for an anthology for someone else, it's really hard to motivate yourself. I think because you're trying to force your idea to fit someone else's mold or whatever they're asking for. So it is difficult, but it is a good skill to have. Especially when you're looking to work for hire to write for other people's properties and IP. We were also included in FC Schultz's newsletter. He said, let me get it up here. Oh, I've lost it. Okay, one sec. Here we go. FC Shorts, by the way, is a great guy. He, we've been friends for a little while now, but in his newsletter, he had a segment here called Third Quarter Goals. My friend Luke Condor has an awesome podcast for authors called Luke's Massive Storytelling Podcast Thing. Thank you. And he just released a new episode for the first time in 5 years. The episode was exactly what I needed to keep motivation for the first draft I'm working on, and as a reminder to set my quarterly goals. I highly recommend the quarterly goals approach. The 3 month window is long enough to get serious work done, but not so long that you lose motivation or forget what the goals are. And he goes on to list his quarter three goals here. I won't read them out here. I think if you want to see his quarter three goals, go and subscribe to his newsletter at fcschultz.com. That's S-H-U-L-T-Z.com. Okay, so today we are talking to Paul Stevenson. Paul Stevenson is an author and blogger, creator of the best-selling British horror series Blood on the Motorway, and of the sci-fi serial The Sunset Chronicles. He writes horror stories, science fiction, and tries to be funny about music on the internet. He grew a beard long before hipsters made it popular, but only because he wanted to hide his chin. He lives in England with his wife and two children, and has an unhealthy relationship with his Spotify account. All right, let's do an interview.
I've done a couple of these podcast interviews before, but like not massive amounts.
I don't think you should be that nervous, because your accent, I mean, your voice, you sound very confident. You sound like you should be doing podcasts.
Well, there is possibility that might be the direction I'm going to go in. I used to do radio years and years ago, or like student radio and stuff. So yeah. I used to enjoy doing that. I don't know why I kind of left it really, but yeah, no, I'm definitely going to look to go in the audio direction again soon.
I did student radio as well. I don't know if you knew that. And I think that's where my podcasting stuff came from. It just kind of carried over from talking. What kind of student radio show did you do?
So I had two. I had one at college where it was like, literally it was, we recorded it in a little room and it was piped into the dining room. And yeah, we were really unpopular. I was like the unpopular hour on a Tuesday with me and my mate would go in and just blast Marilyn Manson and Korn down the speakers to all these people wearing sort of tracksuits and stuff. And we used to have people come and knock on the door and like, can you not do that? It's like, no, yeah, I'm going to carry on, please. But then when I went to university, I for a very brief time, I was on the university radio, and actually managed to, score some quite cool interviews at the time, but like it really didn't, like no one was listening, and it was kind of, yeah, we kind of got booted off by the station. But I interviewed System of a Down, like when they had, I think it was the second day after their album had been released.
So I was gonna say let's compare, because I've got a pretty good one, but now you said that, mine doesn't feel so good. We interviewed the Cheeky Girls.
Nice. Okay, now you beat me. You win.
I don't think so. I don't know about that. By the way, I've hit the recording button, so you should feel like a tingling sensation in your pineal gland. If you could confirm yes or no telepathically, that'd be great.
Got it.
Good. Thanks for that confirmation.
Good.
So I guess we could start where all good creative conversations go. Did you watch the match last night?
Of course. Yeah. No, it was so strange because I'm a big football fan, and I've been watching every game that I can of the Euros. So I think I've missed about six or seven. And so I was expecting to feel more excited about yesterday after we won, but I don't know. I just kind of, the game was so poor, and it was kind of like, it was really nice and I'm really glad we're in the final, but I have a slight feeling that we might get trounced by Italy in the final. We'll see. It was good, but it was just after watching Italy and Spain the night before, just playing beautiful football for 2 hours, watching us lump it long from Jordan Pickford to Harry Kane and try not to get it into his massively open mouth. It was kind of quite difficult, really. But
yeah. Did you grow up watching playing football? Or did you grow up writing and making your own comic books and books and that kind of thing?
Definitely the latter. I didn't get into football until I got to university, and I happened to move in with some Sunderland season ticket holders, and they kind of goaded me into liking football, and I just kind of said, yeah, okay. But yeah, no, before that it was all making tiny comics and weird short stories about, you know, sort of elderly people homes and stuff. So yeah, it's always been music and writing, kind of. My first thing I ever wrote was, I was at school and I was listening to, do you remember the band Carter the Unstoppable Sex Machine at all?
I can't say
90s indie band. It's probably for the best. But they had a song called Granny Farming in the UK, and it was about elder abuse, which is a bit of a strange subject for a jangly indie band. But for some reason, I just sat down and, having never written really anything before, I sat and wrote an entire short story in one sitting. And it was like, ooh, okay. I don't know why I've done this, but I like it. And that started me off really. But then ever since, like, I've always seen the kind of the love for music and the love for writing as being somewhat intertwined.
Yeah, you mentioned this before to me, where you were talking about like indie publishing and self-publishing, that kind of thing, being on a similar vein or a similar line to the sort of the independent record companies.
Yeah, if you look at the Buzzcocks, right, the Buzzcocks couldn't get a gig, really, basically, and they just started making their own records. And just because they started doing that, basically punk happened, and then the entire independent music scene was born out of that. And, you know, when you get a band and you love an album comes out, you don't go, oh, but is it on a major label? Because, you know, but for books, for some reason, we do that. It's like, oh, but what, you know, but, oh, are you properly published? Are you through a traditional publisher? It's a bit like turning around and asking, Tool, why aren't you signed to a bigger label? You know, it's all about, you know, at the end of the day, labels and publishing companies, they're the same. They're distributors. That's really what they are. Mm-hmm. But they've kind of inflated their position over the years to be some kind of glorious gatekeepers. And in music, they broke that down in the 70s, but for publishing, we're still not quite there yet. And I wrote a thing a few years ago about how, you know, indie publishing and self-publishing seem kind of a bit odd names for it. For me, it's punk publishing. You know, it's a bit like, you know, making your own DIY tapes and getting it out there into the world. But we're lucky we've got all these digital kind of ways of distributing things that can get our books and our words out there. There's nothing between us and the readers now.
Yeah. I mean, nowadays you get like SoundCloud rappers, I guess, people who sort of just sit in their bedrooms and or in their cupboards and record little rap albums and put them on SoundCloud. Do you think there's an element of that as well, where because we can self-publish, we can just put stuff out there, and it's very difficult to get people to take it or to respect what we're doing, if that makes sense, or to give it the gravitas that it maybe should be given?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the difficulties now, and I think this is probably for all creatives and not just writers, is actually the difficulty now is getting people, you know, to pay attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same for musicians, and I think it's the same for writers, for filmmakers. You know, anyone can be a filmmaker now. You can, you can make a short video and put it up, and sometimes it'll take, and the really good ones can get really noticed, but then there's probably loads that are made that are really brilliant and no one ever sees them because they never quite tickle the algorithm in the right way, or they never find that one person who's going to go, yeah, I'm going to go and take this and show this to as many people as I can. And, you know, I think in some ways musicians have a bit of an advantage because they can go and play live. We can't. You know, there's not so much that kind of scene of going and just rocking up and in a pub and standing up and reading out our stuff, which is probably good because that would be terrifying. But it's not like we can turn around to a band who are our mates and say, take us on the road so we can, you know, play in front of your fans. It's a bit different. But, you know, then we also have all these great distribution methods and, you know, these great ways of getting our words out there now, which I think is incredibly democratizing for publishing.
Yeah, for sure. That the live gig analogy, that's how I kind of picture like fiction podcasts, just a way of getting bits of your work out in front of people every week, or maybe not every week, but whenever you do manage to get something out there. There are probably a lot of similarities to the music scene. In terms of getting an audience, I mean, your book, Blood on the Motorway, there's so many reviews on that thing. There's like over 200 reviews. So you must have had a fair few eyes on that book.
Yeah, it's done really well. I'm really pleased with how that whole series is done, and it's actually still probably my biggest selling thing. It came out a few years ago, and I found, I think about 2 years ago, I set the first book in the trilogy to free, just to try and encourage people through the door, really. But then, you know, the read through into books two and three is really good, and you know, the reviews are really, really nice, and I've had some fantastic feedback from it, so, which is nice, because it's when it's your first book, you're always a bit like not quite sure find its way in the world in the way that you hope.
When did that one come out? 2016.
Yeah. So, and it was a long time in gestation before that. It actually started off as a kind of an attempt to write a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas kind of, type kind of road novel. But then very quickly I ended the world at the end of the first chapter and thought, well, I guess this is going in a slightly different direction now. And it's post-apocalyptic, and I have to say a huge thank you to my wife, because when I started writing it, it was originally going to be zombies. And she just said, no, just no more zombies, please, God. And sort of grumbled and went back and went, and then I had to think how to make it then interesting. And I thought, well, the zombies are always just a stand-in anyway. So it was always looking to be more what do people do in those circumstances? What happens when you take all the apparatus and all the frameworks and all the, you know, the things that we take so much for granted, what actually happens to people? And there's so much tendency in post-apocalyptic stuff to just assume that everyone basically goes feral. You know, as much as I love Cormac McCarthy's The Road, it's a pretty bleak way of looking at humanity, really. Whereas I tend to think that, you know, yeah, there's bad people, but there's good people too. And so that was really what I wanted to do, was to, you know, tell a story that was about hope as well as being, you know, pretty nasty in places and definitely still a horror. That was kind of where I wanted to go with it.
It has done it very well. Did you independently publish that? But what I meant to say was, did you punk publish that back in 2016?
Yeah. So it was always indie published, punk published, whatever we want to call it. I never, with the exception of an early draft got submitted to the Richard and Judy Book Club competition, okay. Yeah. Which I don't know why it didn't win that. I would have thought it was right up Judy's street, you know, with sort of bodies in the street by the end of the first chapter.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't win that, unsurprisingly. And I was reading another crime author, their blog, and they mentioned something called the self-publishing podcast, which no longer really exists.
Self-publishing podcast was such a huge part of my life. That first year of the self-publishing podcast, which I think is still online, was such a journey.
Yeah, it was. And I think I came into it, I discovered it when it was about 6 months in. And so I instantly went back and binged all of the back episodes that were available up to that point. And it was like getting a degree in publishing, whilst cooking, because I was always used to listen to it whilst cooking.
Yeah.
And it was just so brilliant. And they were so enthusiastic about it. And they were so, you know, they really just, all they wanted to do was just write books and get them out there. And there was it wasn't about, oh, let's make a million, let's do Kindle Gold Rush or anything. It was just, we want to quit our jobs and do this for a living. And that was so inspiring. I loved it. And then I discovered Joanna Penn's podcast as well.
Still going strong.
Still
it's never going to finish.
It's my number one or number two listen of the week every single time it comes out. Because even if I don't like the interview or it's not particularly interesting to me, her introductions are, they're just like, it's like getting enthusiasm juice like injected directly into your ears. I listen to it walking the dog now, and I always come back and immediately sit down and blast out a massive to-do list of things that I want to do. I think that's what I really like about the community of indie publishing, is that it's really supportive and it's really kind. It's really, yeah, everyone wants to help each other, and no one's there to try and, well, there are some people who want to try and make money out of you and what have you, but for the most part, it's just people, we're all the same. We all just want to do well. And I think there's a real nice understanding that, we're not in competition with each other. We're all in the same boat.
Yeah, and back in that like first year of SPP, they were trying so many weird story ideas. So there wasn't a writing to market idea back then, I don't think. So people weren't going, I need to write a very specific type of post-apocalyptic book with a very specific type of cover. They were like, they did Unicorn Western, which is a cowboy magical Western fantasy with unicorns. They did like little sitcom books. They were just trying everything and anything, and they were just having fun, and it was amazing. Yeah. It was like watching a few friends come together, try make each other laugh, try and find their way through it, and it was just so fun to just watch that or listen to that from afar. It's a massive shame that podcast isn't around anymore.
I think they got a bit too big, and I think they got a little bored of the format, but then when they changed the format, it didn't work. And I noticed they came back recently and then it's just disappeared again. But I think those three probably don't realize how lucky they are in terms of the alchemy of what they've got, because you've got Sean, who was such an enthusiastic puppy dog. And then Johnny, who was kind of slightly sarcastic about it all, but it was also just as enthusiastic. But they needed to have Dave there as well, the guy who was just a grumpy, guy sitting in the background, just thinking nothing's going to work and being a bit Eeyore about it all. But I think they needed it. I think they would have been insufferable if it was just the two of them. That magic of the three of them. And, who knows how that's going to happen? I guess you guys have that with Hawk and Cleaver, and the way you guys came together and just found the magic of the other stories is, that's quite an inspiration.
It's weird I don't even think about it that way, because when you're in it, I guess you don't see it from the outside perspective. But I think we did kind of realize we found something that was working. So we just kept doubling down on that one thing. It'd be nice if we sort of were able to go full time just doing that, but it's not the case. Going full time as a writer, we've talked about a few times in the past, I think, over Discord, and what that would mean, which kind of brings me towards what I'm going to call the big hard one, which is every episode, every interview, I'll have a big, penetrating hard question for the interviewee. We've talked about going full time as a writer.
I need some air, Luke. I need some air. I just need a moment. Let me gather myself.
Went a bit Nigella Lawson there. Apologies. So we talked about going full-time as a fiction writer a couple of times over Discord. And part of me thinks, yes, I would love that. I would love to wake up and just work on books 9 to 5, and how amazing that would be. But then there's this other part of me, which I guess is maybe a limiting belief, I'm not too sure, that keeps saying, why do I want that? Do I just want to tell people that I'm a writer? That's kind of I'm not too sure if it's a good goal to just want to become a full-time writer just to tell people that you are, if that makes sense. So I guess my big hard question for you is, why aim to go full-time as a fiction writer, and why not write books for the love of it after hours or in the mornings?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, it's something I'm aiming for. I don't know if I'll ever get there, but it's always going to be my aim. And not necessarily just as a fiction author, but as a creative. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of, I feel like I'm going to be branching more out into creative stuff over the next few years. I got really into doing graphic design a couple of years ago when I learned how to do, some design stuff for my own covers. So I now design all my own covers, but I found covers, I really enjoy it
as well.
Thank you very much. But I want to do creative stuff. And part of it is, I think it depends a lot on where you are with your job. I mean, if you've got a job that you love, mm-hmm. and that's bringing in the bills, then yeah, you probably don't ever need to sort of make that strive, and you can keep things being on a purely, you know, on a purely for the love basis. I'm kind of in a strange situation. I have a successful career in something that I don't enjoy. And it's not awful. And I'm not like, you know, I'm not toiling, you know, stupid hours, and, you know, I my work isn't so difficult that, you know, I'm mentally exhausted or anything like that, but I just don't really enjoy it. And so I would love to be able to replace that with just doing the creative stuff that I do enjoy. And I think that's where it really comes into. I think that's always going to be the strive. Whether I make it, who knows? I think that's down to too many intangibles, and I'm not going to ever try and beat myself up as being, you know, not making it if I don't. But that's where, yeah, I'd like to go.
That's a good answer. I think, I mean, it's as simple as if you enjoy it, if you don't. I mean, the problem is with me, I do kind of enjoy my day job. So there's a part of me that thinks, why would I want to get away? I mean, it pays the bills. They pay for my pension. So why am I trying to get away from it? But I do think maybe I'm just too comfortable and I need to be more uncomfortable to push myself to try and go for that full-time writing gig. But
then there is that myth, isn't there, of the struggling artist. And I don't think artists do have to struggle to be able to make great stuff. I think that's something that, yeah, a lot of artists have tried to perpetuate in order to try and make themselves a little bit more glamorous and sexy, baby. We all want to be Hemingway. But you know, maybe we don't need to struggle. You know, there's plenty
there
of people
are other ways to look sexy. I'm just putting out there, you don't have to be a struggling writer. Push up, I bra. Mean,
to be fair, I probably need to lean into that one. But yeah, a lot of those roads are closed to me. I think getting up in the morning and just writing and doing it every day is much better than waiting for the muse and waiting for that glorious moment to arrive when inspiration's going to strike. And I think a lot of people have that idea of creativity that it needs to be something that comes to you rather than it being something that you work on and that you actively, you know, generate. I've started recently getting up an hour before work to do my writing as opposed to trying to do it after work. And I found, yeah, that actually it's so much better. I mean, one thing, because my head's not clouded with everything that's going on during the day, but also I just find that getting into that routine means those words come so much quicker and it, you know, and they're better as well. When I come back to edit it, it's better stuff than what I was writing at the end of the evening. So I think actually it's like a muscle. You know, you don't turn around to a guitarist and say, oh, do you only write or do you only pick up the guitar when the inspiration takes you? No, most guitarists will pick up a guitar a couple of times a day and have a bit of a pluck around with it because it will make them better. Mm-hmm. I keep bringing back things to music again, don't I?
No, it's fine. I mean, also you feel amazing after if you've got your word count out before you've even started the day job. I just find myself going to work feeling way better about myself. I don't feel like that stress hanging over me that's there thinking, oh, I've still got to do my words after all this bullshit is done. Like I've already taken that part of my life off.
Exactly. I mean, I'm, you know, you mentioned the match last night. So I didn't like stay up and go wild or anything, but I was up a little later than I normally am. So I set the alarm back for normal time this morning and I didn't get my words. And now I'm kind of itching and like, oh God, I've still got to do it. And it's hanging over me. Exactly. I might be kind to myself and give myself the day off from it. But you know, I might try and plow through, but it would have been much better to have gotten up that hour early and just be a bit tired.
Yeah. One thing I noticed as well, I randomly saw a tweet from an actor the other day. He said, I'm just putting this out there, I'm paraphrasing, just putting this out there, if I don't land a TV role or a film role within the next year, I'm calling it quits. And then someone else said, you shouldn't play that game of if I don't do this by this point, just enjoy the process and be happy with whatever results that come from that. So maybe that's a better way to go about it. Not thinking that there's a deadline on. I mean, you can write till you're like 78 or whatever. You don't. There's no deadline on when you have to stop writing.
No, and I mean, I'm in a weird position at the moment. My job that I'm doing at the moment will end in July next year. So at the moment, I'm trying to push and think, well, you know, if I can try and push and get to that point, maybe I can maybe either go part-time or I can, you know, make a full-time go of this. Who knows? But if I don't, I'm not going to be like, oh, right, that's it. I've done. And I'm just chucking in the towel. I don't think it's possible. I think most creative people that I know, they don't ever stop being creative. They might find a different outlet for it, or they might do something else. But generally, if they don't sit down and write a song, or they don't sit down and write something, or record a podcast, or do a YouTube video or something, mm-hmm. they start getting itchy, and they start getting that kind of, oh, I need to do something. I think it's an itch that you can't ever get rid of. So the idea of quitting it seems absurd to me, because I don't know. I mean,
that's true. Yeah, I become a bad person.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a big part of me, and I think it's probably is for most people, where I do sit here thinking, God, why am I doing this? Why am I busting myself so hard to do this? And, you know, if there was someone said, if you think this is a good way to make money, then think again, because, you know, mm-hmm. it's probably the hardest way to make money. You know, this is not an easy fix, and it's not a quick fix. But at the same time, one of the things that's enticing is there's no sort of ceiling to it. You know, if you're one of these people who does really, really well, if you're a Mark Dawson or a Andy Weir or someone like that, you know, and it just all falls into place for you, you can go as far as you want with it. There's no yeah. kind of, you know, with my job, I've got a decent job, but there's only so far in it I can go. There's only as much as I'll ever earn doing it. Next July, end of July okay. next year.
And I guess this would probably be a nice way to start wrapping up. Is what steps are you taking to, as you work towards that deadline? Do you have like daily plans or anything like that? Or
I have so many spreadsheets. I've got a serial called The Sunset Chronicles, which launched back in March this year, and that's a monthly ebook serial. And that will be going for the next 5 years, I think. I've got it all kind of planned out, or roughly planned out. The first three series of it are written and done. The first series wraps up in the next week or so from recording this. But then I've got a few other plans as well. I'm going to try and get more into the graphic design stuff. But then I do also, as I said earlier on, I want to move into the audio thing. So I've had a bit of a light bulb inspiration moment for an idea for a podcast. So I'm going to be shamelessly stealing from the Hawk and Cleaver and trying to get something. It's going to be, if you're a fan of the other stories, you'd find interesting as well.
Paul's other stories.
Some other stories. No, it's going to be a horror fiction podcast in and it's going to be, you know, different tales every week, but with a sort of a general central theme to it. So the moment it's still very much at the planning stage, but I've got high hopes for that too.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, I'll maybe when you get close to that deadline, you can jump back on. We could chat a bit more, see how you're getting on, and go from there. But for now, I mean, where can people follow you and your work?
I'm PRS Books on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and any other social media you can think of. And you can go to my website, paulstevensonbooks.com, where you can get the first book in each of my series completely free to download, and you don't even need to give me your email address. So by all means, do come stop by and do that.
Awesome. Any parting wisdom before you close off your pineal gland forever?
Parting wisdom: don't get too excited for the match on Sunday, but do get a little bit excited for the match on Sunday.
Okay, I think I'm about there.
Yeah,
just about there. Yeah, nice one. All right, I'm gonna hit the stop recording button.
There we have it. another episode in the bag, the big bag of podcast episodes. That was the amazing Paul Stevenson. We'll be checking in on him, making sure he's doing okay on his mission. So I guess my question for you guys this week is, do you want to be a full-time author or full-time creative? And why do you want to be a full-time author or full-time creative? Music today was provided by Tom Robson and Duke Rondo. Go check out more of my work at lukecondor.com. That's K-O-N-D-O-R. Join the newsletter at tinyletter.com/Luke of Condor. Yeah. I'll talk to you in a bit. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.